is any representation from the NDA, but anyway, the department is here. Welcome all to this meeting, as well as to the officials. Our members, just in terms of the first agenda item, which is the briefing by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development on the national, the NPA Amendment Bill. In terms of this agenda item, our members will first receive a briefing from the department on the bill, and thereafter we'll then deal with the department's responses to public comments. So members will have an opportunity to interact firstly with the bill, and then we'll then interact with the department's responses to public submissions. The National Computing Authority Amendment Bill was tabled in Parliament on the 29th of August 2023, and the bill was referred to the committee on the 5th of December 2023. I'm going to hand over to the Deputy Minister then to take us through the bill. DM, if you take us through, and then we'll take a pause thereafter to allow members to engage with the presentation before we go on to the second. Minister, over to you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson, and good morning to all honourable members. The slide presentation on the bill, I think, was sent to the committee some time ago. DDG Pillay from Legislative Development will lead the team, either take everybody through it or lead or delegate who it's going to go to. But in short, what this bill does is to currently, in terms of the NPA Act, the president by proclamation can establish an investigating directorate on specific issues. And the president did that earlier on in the term to establish a investigating directorate largely on corruption. The intention of this bill is to make that body, that investigating directorate on corruption, to make it a statutory body, so provide for it in legislation, so it can't just be removed by a withdrawal of the presidential proclamation. And secondly, it provides for that investigating directorate to be able to employ its own investigators. Currently, it has investigators, but they are seconded from usually the police. And this now would allow the directorate to appoint its own, who then would be working purely for the directorate. In terms of that, the bill is trying to ensure parity between members of the directorate, investigators of the directorate, with investigators from the DPCI, or the Hawks as they're more colloquially known. So that's really the gist of the bill. Just to say that there is acceptance that there needs to be a broader overview of the National Prosecuting Authority Act. The bill in its earlier incarnation had a provision on the appointment of the National Director of Public Prosecutions. That was taken out because there are complexities around the president has the unfettered power to appoint the National Director. With the current National Director, he set up a process which enabled a team to run the process, basically interview or advertise and interview people, and then made a selection from there. The question is whether that can be put into ordinary legislation or whether it would have to be a constitutional amendment. So the bill needs to be seen in the context that there will be an overhaul of the National Prosecuting Authority Act, and the minister's undertaken this would still be something that if there's a new minister, they would have to respond to, but that would be tabled in Parliament by the beginning of next year. So, Chair, that's the brief introduction to the bill and the highlights. If I can then hand over to Ms. Pillay to go through the presentation. Thanks, Chair.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. I'm trying to share my screen. Thank you, Chairperson. May I proceed?
Please continue, Ms. Pillay.
Thank you very much. Our Deputy Minister has given an overview of the bill, so I'm going to proceed just briefly on a background on slide 3. The President established the Investigating Directorate in the Office of the NDPP by Proclamation 20 of 2019 in terms of Section 7(1) of the National Prosecuting Authority Act. The ID is required to investigate and prosecute serious, high-profile, or complex commercial or corruption cases, or cases involving offences or unlawful activities arising from, among others, the Commission of Inquiry into Allegations of State Capture, Corruption, and Fraud in the Public Sector, State Capture Commission. But is in its current form an entity created by proclamation and not a permanent entity or unit within the NPA. A permanent entity will not be susceptible to a challenge on the basis that it permits undue political or executive interference with the independence of the ID. The bill aims to bring about amendments to the NPA Act to facilitate the establishment of the permanent entity within the office of the NDPP. The envisaged amendments in short entails the establishment of the Investigating Directorate Against Corruption, the appointment of investigators, their remuneration, condition of service, and powers. The amendments support the independence of the Investigating Directorate Against Corruption. Currently, the ID is not a permanent entity within the NPA. At present, the independence of the ID can be compromised since government departments or institutions can, and in fact have threatened to, recall reassigned employees from the ID. The NPA Act ought to be amended to make provision for the permanent appointment of investigators and the required additional skills in the ID. Moving on to the discussion of the bill, Clause 1 extends the preamble to provide for the prosecuting authority to fulfill its constitutional mandate in terms of the Constitution and to provide, without limiting the investigative powers of the South African Police or the Directorate of Priority Crimes Investigation, for the establishment of the Investigating Directorate Against Corruption, with investigative capacity to prioritize and to investigate matters in respect of its specific mandate, as will be outlined further below. The preamble is also amended to underscore the importance of the establishment of the Investigating Directorate Against Corruption in light of the systemic corruption in society, which requires specialized, dedicated, multidisciplinary measures to combat corruption. Clause 2 amends certain definitions of the NPA Act, which are consequential in nature, arising out of the establishment of the Investigating Directorate Against Corruption. Clause 3 amends Section 5 of the NPA Act to include investigators as part of the office of the NDPP. Clause 4 amends Section 7 by establishing the Investigating Directorate, which is known as the Investigating Directorate Against Corruption, with the aim to investigate and to carry out any function incidental to investigations, and where appropriate, institute criminal proceedings and carry out any necessary functions incidental to instituting criminal proceedings relating to the following: offenses or any criminal or unlawful activities committed in serious, high profile or complex corruption or commercial or financial crime cases arising from the recommendations of commissions of inquiry. Matters reported to the investigating director in terms of Section 27 of the NPA Act. matters referred to the national director, matters referred by the national director to the investigating director in terms of Section 28(1)(b) of the NPA Act, and include all existing offences or categories of offences listed in Proclamation 20 of 2019, which have now been specifically spelled out in the bill. Clause 4 also amends Section 7 of the NPA Act by inserting a new subsection to empower the President to establish, by proclamation in the Gazette, one or more additional investigating directorates to investigate matters that exclude those contemplated in subsection 1A. Any proclamation issued shall be issued and may be amended or rescinded by the President on the recommendation of the Minister. That's referring to the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services and the Cabinet Member responsible for police and the NDPP. Clause 5 amends Section 13 of the Act to include in the criteria for the appointment of the head of the investigating directorate that such person must be a fit and proper person with due regard to his or her experience, conscientiousness, and integrity. Clause 6 inserts Chapter 3B and provides for the appointment, remuneration, and conditions of service of investigators. Clause 6 also provides for the vetting of investigators and the condition for appointment of being in possession of a security clearance. The vetting investigation must be conducted in terms of Section 2A of the National Strategic Intelligence Act of 1994, as amended by the General Laws Amendment Act of 2013. Remuneration, allowances, and other service benefits of investigators are determined by the Minister in consultation with the National Director, the Cabinet Member responsible for public service and administration, and the Cabinet Member responsible for finance. The remuneration must be on par with or not less favorable than those under the SAPS Act. Clause 7 amends Section 22 to make provision for the training of investigators. Clause 8 inserts a new Section 22A for a complaints mechanism for the appointment of a retired judge for a non-renewable period of 5 years to exercise oversight over the investigators. These clauses mirror the provisions relating to the judge appointed for the DPCI. The functions of the retired judge does not derogate from the powers of the South African police or the Director of Priority Crime Investigation to investigate any criminal conduct in respect of investigators. The retired judge shall not investigate complaints about intelligence matters falling under the jurisdiction of the Inspector General of Intelligence. The retired judge may receive complaints in the prescribed form from any person who may provide evidence of a serious and unlawful infringement of his or her rights caused by the conduct of investigators. Any investigator who may provide evidence of any improper influence or interference, hindrance or obstruction, whether of a political or any other nature, exerted upon him or her in the exercise, carrying out, or performance of his or her powers, duties, and functions. The retired judge shall report to the minister the outcome of any investigation undertaken by him or her, or any referral in terms of subsection 5. The retired judge may obtain information and documents under the control of the prosecuting authority, may enter any building or premises under the control of the prosecuting authority in order to obtain such information and documents, and shall be entitled to all reasonable assistance by any investigator as referred to in Section 74A or any other member of the prosecuting authority. Clause 9 inserts Section 29A in the NPA Act to provide for the powers and functions of investigators. An investigator has the same powers as are bestowed upon a peace officer or a police official in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act of 1977. These powers relate inter alia to the investigation of offences, entry and search of a premises, the seizure and disposal of articles, arrest, and the execution of warrants. It provides further that the minister may, by notice, and in consultation with the cabinet member responsible for police, bestow any power which relates to the prevention, investigation, or combating of any offence or any other criminal or unlawful activity upon investigators. Clause 10 inserts Section 43C in the NPA Act to provide for transitional arrangements. It provides that the current ID shall cease to exist as a separate investigating directorate and shall become part of the investigating directorate against corruption. It also provides that the investigating director and staff of the current ID shall remain in office and continue their functions in the investigating directorate against corruption. Clause 11 effects consequential amendments as reflected in the schedule to the definition of directorate in Section 1 of the Regulation of Interception and Communications and Provision of Communication Related Information Act. That's RICA. The schedule amends RICA to make provision for the investigating directorate. Clause 12 amends the index to the NPA Act to provide for the insertion of the new provisions. Clause 13 contains the short title and commencement. Thank you, Chairperson. That's the presentation.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pillay. And DM, I would imagine you'll come in later if members have questions. And DM, thank you. Thank you both for the presentation that was made to the committee. On members, there we have it. The NPA Amendment Bill establishes the Investigating Directorate Against Corruption as a permanent entity within the Office of the National Director of Public Prosecutions, and the bill also provides for the appointment and powers of investigators and their remuneration and conditions of service. Hence, on members, the Investigating Directorate will be made a permanent feature in our anti-corruption law enforcement efforts. And it would also strengthen the work of the NPA. On members, I'm going to, if you can give me an indication whether you have any question and or comment that you would like to make. I see the hand of Honorable Maleka. Perhaps you could start in the meantime, Honorable Maleka.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the Deputy Minister, the officials, honorable members, and welcome the presentation. Chairperson, I want to check, how does the bill ensure that the investigating directorate will operate independently and be able to do its work without any interference? What are some of the challenges that the directorate currently needs to overcome to function optimally and realize this? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Maleka. Honorable Dodovu.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I join Honorable Maleka to welcome the presentation. I think this is long overdue, and My wish is that we must just accelerate this, finalize the passage of the bill to become an act, so that all the systems, structures, and processes in regard to this bill must be put in place, and this IDC must be supported, must be enhanced, must be resourced, so that it accomplishes its objective. Honorable Chairs, I understand this ID, independent directorate, specifically focuses on corruption. And my question would be, why do you call it ID currently? Why don't you call it IDC? So that it becomes very clear that this independent directorate specifically focuses on corruption. And every time I hear you calling it ID, independent directorate, why that emphasis is not there in respect of corruption. I'm saying this because I see this, and maybe Deputy Minister will clarify this. I see this operating in the mold of the Scorpions. But obviously, as we know, the Scorpions, before it was disbanded, it was not focusing on corruption alone, but it was also focusing on other areas. And its de-establishment had profound implications for all of us. But this one deals with corruption, and why not that emphasis that it is called IDC, so that it becomes very clear to an ordinary person that this body will deal specifically with corruption, which is quite welcome, Honorable Chair. That's the first point. The second point for me is the office of the judge that will look at the complaints, transgressions, ill discipline, or whatever that is pertaining to the officers of this IDC, which is very, very good. My view is that I don't see any turnaround time in terms of dealing with the complaints against officers of this body. And as I look at this, and the presentation emphasized it, that this is in the mold of the judge who is appointed to deal with the related complaints pertaining to the Hawks. And I'm aware that complaints are lodged. It takes a long time. A retired judge in this case of the Hawks is not well equipped with the necessary resources, sufficient resources to deal with the complaints regarding the Hawks. And if the similar problem is going to obtain in respect of the retired judge for the purpose of this, it's going to be problematic. Just for me, with my limited observation, I foresee a lot of cases going to come out of this particular directorate, and we have observed that in some instances officers are not to the book in terms of their conduct, in terms of their practices, in terms of what they do, and this may require a fully functional office of the retired judge to deal with this particular complaints. And I really request that this be done so that the office is fully equipped with some turnaround time to resolve the complaints that would have been forwarded to the office of the retired judge for this purpose. For now, thank you very much. This is welcomed. In my respective view, it must be facilitated and be finalized. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dodogu. I think those are the two hands. Let me thank the two honorable members for the questions. But just from my side, just to add to the question that Honorable Dodogu just raised around the appointment of the retired judge, as you respond to that, I think he covered me to some extent. But yeah, as you respond to that, DM and your team, you can also elaborate in terms of how it will be operationalized in terms of timeframes and the appointment process. Over to you, DM, to respond to those few questions. DM,
thanks. Let me just start, and then Ms. Pillay can add. The first question on how will it work without interference? The Constitution provides that national legislation must ensure that the prosecuting authority exercises its functions without fear, favor, or prejudice. That then is the national legislation is the National Prosecuting Authority Act which we are amending to establish the Investigating Directorate on Corruption as a permanent body. So it's within the overall context of the National Prosecuting Authority, where I think in the term of the current national director, there haven't been allegations of political interference in the cases that are done. So I would argue that as with prosecutors, it would be under the control of the national director, and they would largely be able to do what they need to investigate. The fact that they can employ their own investigators means that they are not dependent on a secondment, or as was raised in the presentation, that if somebody is seconded, that they can be then withdrawn by that body. So that would also increase the independence. Then on the name, the National Prosecuting Authority Act refers to investigating directorates. So that's where that title comes from. What is provided for in this act is a investigating directorate on corruption. That's the specific name that can be given to it. So that's a statutory name, investigating directorate on corruption. So I guess there is still provision for the president to appoint other investigating directorates still by proclamation. That may be, and the question has been raised in I think some of the public submissions, why is that still necessary? Well, as has been said, unlike the scorpions, this directorate can only investigate corruption and related matters. So if there's a problem of, let's say, taxi violence or zama-zamas, that there may be a decision that, look, we need a special directorate to focus on those cases. Which the ID can't do because it's limited to corruption, or the IDC. So there's nothing stopping this body being it is, as I said, in the Act, the investigating, or in the Bill, the Investigating Directorate on Corruption. There's nothing stopping it being referred to then as the IDC, but there will be other, or there could be other investigating directorates. Then on the issue of the judge, look, the issue there was that there was concern, particularly from the police, that you do have, when it comes to the Hawks, you do have this provision for a judge to investigate complaints. It's not so much the prosecutors, but particularly the investigators. If they do wrong things, what happens to them? And that's why there's a similar provision in the bill for a retired judge to be appointed to look at those. We don't, because they're largely going to be instructed by the prosecutor who's handling the case, or the prosecutors who are handling the case, it's going to involve the prosecutor if things have gone wrong, but we don't envisage too many complaints. It's going to be a much smaller number of investigators. But yes, we are mindful of the problems that have been experienced by the designated judge for the Hawks, and would want to ensure that is not repeated, and that person is able to do their work and given the necessary resources for that. I think let me then hand over to Ms. Pillay to add.
Thank you, Deputy Minister and Chairperson. I think the Deputy Minister has largely answered the questions. And just to say that this investigating directorate, and it's legislated that it will be called, or it's going to be legislated that it's called the Investigating Directorate Against Corruption. So it will have that specific name, as being investigating directorate against corruption. With regard to the turnaround time to deal with complaints, the act or the bill doesn't propose a specific time period because that might limit the effectiveness in terms of complexity of investigations. However, there is a provision in the bill for the appointed judge to report on an annual basis on investigation so that there's a degree of transparency insofar as investigations that have been lodged with him or her. On the question of how will the provisions be operationalized, once and should the president assent to the bill, then the act will come into operation. And then the work of the minister and the department would be to identify the judge and to process the appointment in terms of the judge's remuneration legislation, so that the judge would be appointed accordingly in consultation with the Chief Justice. DM, I hope I've added effectively to what you were saying. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thanks, Ms. Pillay. Chair, that's then the responses. Did we respond to your question? Chair?
Yes, DM, I think Ms. Pillay touched.
Okay. Chair, your reception doesn't seem to be that good.
DM, are you done?
From my side.
Honourable members, can you hear me?
Now we can hear you. Well, now I can hear you.
Okay. Okay, now my network is a bit unsteady, but be that as it may, let me thank you, DM, and Ms. Pillay for your responses to members' questions. I think if there are any follow-ups, the members can pick it up in the next process. So, members, as I indicated earlier, we're then going to deal with the department's responses to public comments. I should just indicate that the bill was advertised for comment from the 7th of December 2023 to the 26th of January 2024. The committee received 4 submissions. The submissions were from AfriForum, from the Council for the Advancement of the South African Constitution, Transnet, and the Helen Suzman Foundation. And I'm going to request then the Deputy Minister to take us then through the department's responses to these public submissions. Thereafter, members can then interact with that presentation. Deputy Minister, over to yourself.
Chair, thanks. I think with this one, I'll ask Ms. Pillay to go through the comments and the responses. It was sent to the, there we are. These were sent to the members of the Select Committee, I think, a few weeks ago.
Ms. Pillay?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just checking if the document is visible on your side.
It's visible on the screen.
Okay, thank you very much. As pointed out by the Chairperson...
But sorry, Calais, you may want to... I don't know if you can do this. There's a lot of sort of word stuff on top. I don't know if you can have just the document.
Okay, is that better?
That's better, yeah.
Okay, thank you, DM. As pointed out by the chairperson, there were 4 comments that were received. We have summarized them on a clause-by-clause basis. Clause 1 to 3, there were no comments that were received. On clause 4, there was a comment from CASAC, which pointed out that section 7.1a sub A must be amended to expressly include any matters referred to the NPA by the Special Investigating Unit, allowing the investigation in terms of the SIU Act in terms of the tribunal as well. The department does not agree with the proposal. The proposed mandate of the IDAC is primarily to investigate and prosecute corruption, whereas matters arising from the SIU investigations and its mandate may not be corruption related, but includes maladministration. The matters referred by the SIU to the NPA fall squarely within the mandate of the National Prosecution Service of the NPA. It is intended that the IDAC's mandate be limited to corruption matters as set out in the bill to give priority to these matters and focus its resources accordingly. Making the IDAC responsible for all SIU matters may divert the resources of the IDAC from corruption and related matters. Clause 7.1a sub 2 caters for the NDPP to refer serious, high-profile or complex corruption, commercial or financial crime cases to the IDAC. Should matters arising from the SIU investigations require a referral to the IDAC, the NDPP is empowered to do so. The second comment from CASEC was, the memorandum on the objects of the NPA Amendment Bill does not explain why Section 7.1b is necessary or why the Department of Justice has chosen to retain this discretionary power for the President and why any matters contemplated in that provision cannot be dealt with by other divisions of the NPA. This power should remain the sole preserve of Parliament, and the President should not be granted a discretionary power to circumvent Parliament's processes. In response to this, Chairperson, the power of the President to establish ad hoc investigating directorates is an important empowering provision to cater for instances requiring investigation and prosecution of specific types of matters or categories of matters that require immediate but short-term intervention. Proclamations issued in this regard must be referred to Parliament in terms of the current provisions of the Act, thereby retaining parliamentary oversight over the issuing of a proclamation. The third comment from CASEC was Section 7.1b should be deleted, and this will necessitate the consequential deletion of Section 7.2 of the Principal Act. However, if Parliament retains Section 7.1b, then Section 7.2c of the NPA Act must be amended to make any draft proclamation subject to approval by the National Assembly before its publication in the Gazette. The Department disagrees with this specific proposal, as the current provisions cater for sufficient parliamentary oversight and empowers the executive to make decisions in matters of a serious nature where urgent action is required. There were no comments on Clause 5. On Clause 6, insertion of Chapter 3B, the appointment, remuneration, and conditions of service, Transnet commented that they support the objectives of the bill. The nature, scope, and complexity of commercial and financial crimes require not only relevant and specialized experience and skill, but also formal tertiary education. The financial and commercial acumen of an investigator is crucial in the establishment of relevant evidence, including access and use of information available to trace and investigate crime. It is recommended that minimum qualifications for investigators of IDEC be a relevant tertiary education. The comment is noted, however, the department does not agree that a tertiary qualification be a requirement for appointment. This may limit or preclude the recruitment of investigators who have built up extensive skills and knowledge through experience, who are from, for example, from SAPS or the DPCI, but who do not possess a tertiary qualification. And as I said, they may have built up the necessary skills to make an invaluable contribution if appointed as an ID investigator. A similar provision was in the IPED Act, but I understand there's an amendment bill that is currently before this committee, which extends this qualification to include a tertiary education. However, in terms of the bill that we presently have before the committee, we believe that making a tertiary education a qualifying criteria may limit the pool of prospective candidates and may not work to the advantage of appointing investigators with the relevant experience. Kasek commented that Section 19E makes appointment of an investigator subject to obtaining a security clearance certificate from the State Security Agency. This provision is too broad and gives too much power to the SSA. This provision should be amended to provide that SSA may not unreasonably withhold a security clearance certificate and that SSA should provide reasons to the NDPP for any delay to issue a certificate within 60 days of a request. The department disagrees with this proposal as vetting is a mandate of SSA. Administrative or operational issues that can be resolved through engagements between the heads of institutions are handled as per sound intergovernmental relations practice. However, Chairperson, I'd like to add here that in the legislation pertaining to the powers of SSA, there are provisions for vetting field units, and vetting field units are currently operationalized in terms of the Department of Home Affairs, and I think there's one other department where vetting field units are established to assist specific departments, and these arrangements are operationalized through memoranda of understanding to ensure that the vetting process takes place efficiently and speedily. Clause 7 to 13, there were no specific comments. However, there were some general comments on the bill, and I'll deal with them next. There were comments from AfriForum that the bill in its current form does not proffer substantive solutions to the myriad of challenges crippling the NPA. It falls short of implementing meaningful reforms necessary to overhaul the existing issues within the NPA. The bill neglects the critical aspect of parliamentary oversight, allowing it to predominantly remain within the political influence and control of the national executive. And this raises concerns over the independence and impartiality of the NPA. The bill does not cater for existing deficiencies within the broader justice system, notably the operational inadequacies of the SAPs, the congestion in the courtrooms, overpopulated correctional centers that do not serve as deterrent to criminals, and this erodes public trust in the NPA. The current form of the bill failed to affirmatively institutionalize the autonomy and independence of the NPA from undue external influences without explicit provisions to shield the NPA from political pressures, and it remains susceptible to manipulations, conflicts of interest, and biases that jeopardize its credibility and undermine the pursuit of unbiased justice. One of the profound shortcomings of the NPA Amendment Bill is its conspicuous neglect of reinforcing parliamentary oversight, which is a legislative requirement, and the inefficient justice system, challenges in SAPs, court backlogs, etc. And it argues that holistic reforms are required. In response to this comment, Chairperson, which we have noted, the intention of these amendments, as set out by the Deputy Minister in his opening remarks, the intention of the amendments is to establish the IDAC as a permanent entity in the NPA and not render the investigating directorate responsible for the investigation and prosecution of corruption, susceptible to disbandment by way of proclamation. The establishment of the IDEC is a significant step in creating a permanent structure within the NPA to drive prosecution-led investigation into corruption and to prosecute these offences. Any amendment to the legislation, if passed by Parliament, can then only be amended by Parliament. This is significant as the current ID is established by way of presidential proclamation. The NPA accounts to Parliament in respect of its annual performance and when required to do so by both the Portfolio Committee and SCOPA. The role of Parliament is provided for in the NPA Act, the role of Parliament is provided for in sections 12, 14, 18, 21, 35 and 40 relating to prosecution policy accountability to Parliament, and removal from office. The broader review of the legislation pertaining to the NPA will be conducted in the new administration. The National Assembly, when passing the bill, has requested that such a bill be tabled before the end of January 2025. The general comments from CASAC is the bill is a welcome step that guarantees the permanence of the investigating directorate, though it stops short of granting the NPA full institutional independence. The NPA designates the Director General as the accounting officer and vests him or her essential budgetary functions over the NPA. This is inimical to the NPA's full financial and operational independence from the executive. The NPA Act should be amended to designate the NPA as the NDPP as the NPA's accounting officer. The NPA's budget should be defrayed from Parliament and not through the Department of Justice vote in order to ensure that the NPA's budgetary needs are addressed in accordance with the operational demands, it should be treated as an independent institution as envisaged in Section 179 of the Constitution. The Department notes the comments, but we wish to add that the sourcing of the budget for the NPA through the Department of Justice is in line with the current constitutional framework in Section 179(6), which places the exercise of final responsibility over the NPA on the cabinet member responsible for the administration of justice. Section 36(3) of the NPA Act provides the Department of Justice must, in consultation with the National Director, prepare the necessary estimate of revenue and expenditure of the NPA. The Act requires that the National Director must agree with the estimate of revenue and budget. These decisions cannot be unilaterally exercised by the Director General of Justice. The Act therefore ensures that the budget provided will meet the needs of the prosecuting authority. However, we reiterate that a broader review of legislation pertaining to the NPA, including aspects related to its operational and financial independence, will be conducted and a draft bill will be submitted to Parliament by the end of January 2025. The Ellen Suzman Foundation reiterated the need for broader reform of the NPA. In terms of the removal of the NDPP, deputy NDPPs and DPPs, and it's essential that the process for their appointment be designed to reduce the risk of undue political interference and give the public confidence that the most suitable candidates are chosen. It also mentions giving Parliament, Cabinet and President a critical role in appointing the NDPP, DNDPPs and DPPs reduces the risk that one center of political power holds sway over the NPA's top leadership. Giving the committee and the minister a critical role in appointing the NDPP may require amending sections 179A of the Constitution, and this does not prevent the president from involving them as a matter of practice in appointing the NDPP. In McBride versus the Minister of Police, the Constitutional Court declared unconstitutional powers of suspension exercised unilaterally by the Minister of Police in respect of the IPED. This was because Section 206, sub 6 of the Constitution expressly requires that the IPED be independent. The same role should be given to the Portfolio Committee on Justice before the President is able to suspend the NDPP, DNDPPs, and DPPs, and to the whole National Assembly as a whole before he can remove them. To prevent a situation similar to the disbanding of the Scorpions, the bill should be amended to protect the Directorate from a bare parliamentary majority by requiring that its dissolution should garner 2/3 majority. Chairperson, in response to these comments, the comments are noted and were considered by the Parliament, the Portfolio Committee, and we reiterate that the intention of these amendments is to establish the IDAC as a permanent entity and not be susceptible to disbandment by way of proclamation. A broader review of legislation pertaining to the NPA Act will be conducted, as I've indicated above, in conjunction with the provisions of the Constitution, as is mentioned by the Ellen Sussman Foundation. We further wish to point out that at paragraph 5.2.19 of the President's response submitted to Parliament in October 2022 in respect of implementing the recommendations of the State Capture Commission, the following undertaking was made by the President: to address concerns with respect to the independence of the NPA, legislative amendments will be introduced to introduce greater transparency and consultation in the process for the selection and appointment of the NDPP, drawing on the process adopted for the selection of the current NDPP. Work will be undertaken to clarify the Minister's final responsibility over the NPA as set out in Section 33 of the NPA Act and settling aspects related to the NPA's financial and administrative independence. With that, Chairperson, we conclude our response to the comments made. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pillay and DM, for that presentation. Honourable members, are there any questions that you have in terms of the responses? Okay, I'm not seeing any hand that is up. I take it that in the previous process, members did make some comments. But maybe just from my side, DM, I think many of the comments call for more independence of the NPA and for broader institutional reform. Just in terms of the comments from the response, rather, from the department, where you speak of a broader reform that will be undertaken and that a bill will be tabled by January 2025. Now, GM, we welcome this, but can you provide more information regarding the extent of this reform that is proposed and where is the department in the processing of this proposed bill? DM?
Thanks, Chair. Look, this is something that the Portfolio Committee in the National Assembly was concerned about. And so the undertaking was made by the Minister on behalf of the Department that legislation would be ready by the beginning of next year. And that would be obviously after a consultation process. But the key issues are relating to the appointment of the NDPP and possibly other deputy national directors or senior people. As I said, this bill originally provided for the need for a consultative process for the appointment of the NDPP, as was done with the appointment of the current NDPP. However, there was concern about, can that be done in ordinary legislation or should that be done as an amendment to the Constitution, which gives the President the power to appoint the NDPP. Then there would be issues relating to this that have been raised, the Director General of Justice being the accounting officer. And is that appropriate? So that's sort of one particular area. Those are some of the points. There is also the issue that there is a National Anti-Corruption Council that is coming out with a report very soon on institutional arrangements to deal with corruption. So issues coming from that may need to be figured in. So I don't know if DDG Pillay would like to add anything. Those are the issues that need to be looked at, but we would be waiting for input from the National Anti-Corruption Council, and we would be looking for, but those are some of the issues that I identify that need to be addressed with this. Calais, anything?
No, thank you, Chairperson and Deputy Minister, nothing further.
Okay, thank you very much, DM, for that response to the question. I think our members will then pause here in terms of this bill, and we can take further deliberations in another meeting of the committee on the NPA amendment bill. We'll then move on to the second agenda item.
Chair, just before you move off, I should have said it while I was on the floor. Just echoing what Honourable Member Dodovo had raised, we are eager to have this bill, and the National Prosecuting Authority, and there are now some members, Advocate Johnson, who's head of the Investigation Directorate, and Dr. David Broughton are on the platform. So to some extent, I'm playing to the gallery, their gallery. But it's the issue of the sooner this bill can be passed, the better. So that, as you are aware, the ID is facing challenges in terms of dealing with some of its cases. So the sooner they are better capacitated, the better. And to urge, without interfering with parliamentary process or putting executive pressure on you, but to urge the NCOP to finalize the bill as soon as possible.
Thank you very much, DM. I think we understand the importance of this bill. And thank you very much. Our members will then move on to the next agenda item, which is the committee deliberation on the Cannabis for Private Purposes Bill. Our members, you'll recall that in our last meeting on this bill was on the 25th of January 2024, and in that meeting, we received the department's response to the submissions on the cannabis bill. In this meeting, it also became clear that many commentators raised issues outside the bill, particularly in respect to the right to cultivate. The department informed the committee that the right to cultivate is not prohibited by the bill. Instead, clause 4, subclause 5 prohibits the cultivation of cannabis in excess of the number of plants that will be determined by the minister in the regulations. The bill creates a new legal framework to govern cannabis for private use by adults and alternative means to deal with children and cannabis use. This in line with the Constitution and the two constitutional court judges handed down in, the one was in Prince and the other was the Center for Child Law in 2018 and 2022 respectively. The bill therefore legalizes cannabis to give effect to the children the right to use or possess cannabis. The bill aims to respond to the Prince judgment, which legalized the use, possession, and cultivation of cannabis for personal consumption, and the sale of cannabis will be regulated by the contemplated national legislation to be promoted by, the commercialization of cannabis or sale, will be promoted by another national department and not the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. In our previous meeting on members, another meeting due to the time constraints at that meeting. So I'm going to open it up then for honorable members. If you have any questions or comments that you want to post to the department in terms of their responses to the public submissions, if members can perhaps, just one moment. Okay, and Ms. Pillay has also requested to be released. She's welcome to any of your members, DM, that are dealing with one bill and not the other, are welcome to leave the platform once you're done with that.
Chair, thanks. That's why I put my hand up.
Our members,
thanks.
Okay. I was just reading the chat as well. So, all right. And thank you, Ms. Pillay. Let me say that before she leaves. Our members, are there any further deliberations that honourable members would like to make in terms of the cannabis for private use bill? If you can maybe give me an indication. Okay. Okay, maybe let me kick off just with regard to the fact that on the issue of penalties, DM, you know, it was indicated through the portfolio committee process when they processed the bill that there was a reduction in penalties. Perhaps if the department could elaborate more on this, just for our understanding as a committee. I think I had that one issue, but obviously, I mean, the bill gives effect to the two constitutional court judges judgments. So yeah, I'm sure members are pretty much covered by that. DM, over to yourself, just to respond to that.
Yeah, Chair, sorry, I'm just trying to, I've had the other, I was a bit slow in changing, in going back to the, getting rid of the NPA stuff. But look, we've got, maybe if I can come back to it, but to start with, it would be Chief Director Sebela Mecha and Mr. Mukulu Bete and Mr. Dupria, who are on dealing with this bill, if they would just like to go through the penalties issue. Obviously, the question, one wants to ensure that serious penalties of dealing in large amounts of cannabis or transporting it are penalized, but the general use is not really. There were issues relating to the penalties being lowered for children. I mean, not for children, sorry, for adults who allow children to use cannabis. We obviously want to avoid a situation where we unnecessarily criminalize people in a family who may be the breadwinners in terms of sending them to prison for long periods. Some comparison that was done with the issue of the sale of liquor, which is also prohibited to children. But I think that Mr. Mukulu Bete will speak on that in terms of what the comparisons are with that. But it's an issue of it would usually be parents, caregivers, relatives who allow children to take cannabis. There is provision for the matter to be taken to a children's court to see whether the child should remain with those parents or caregivers. But we need to be careful about unnecessarily sending parents, caregivers to jail for extended periods for that. But can I hand over to Mr. Sebela Mecha and he can then direct further. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members and Deputy Minister. I will request Mr. Mukulu Bete to take us through and also assisted by Mr. Dupree. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members, and thank you to the Deputy Minister and Advocate Sebela Mecha. Chair, in short, the Deputy Minister has addressed the issue. In short, all I can add in relation to that matter is that the sentiments that we received when the bill was before the Portfolio Committee was that the Prince judgment was legalizing the use and possession and cultivation of cannabis, but our bill was still making provisions for penalties, which are higher in terms of the incarceration of the offenders. And as a result, that was contrary to the sentiment expressed in the Prince judgment in as far as the legalization of cannabis was concerned. So the issue was that the penalties were too heavy, and that was in direct contrast with the Prince judgment. And the deliberations that were undertaken at the portfolio committee led chairperson to the conclusions that to avoid the misconceptions that the bill is still criminalizing, we should rather reduce the penalties. And the suggestion was incorporated and accepted, and hence, Chair, we have reduced the penalties. And by way of an example, Chair, in terms of the previous bill, or at the bill as it was introduced, the penalty for cultivation of cannabis, or I beg your pardon, Chair, the dealing in cannabis, the penalty was a 15-year imprisonment term. And as a result of the proposal that the penalties should be reduced, we have proposed the reduction to 10 years. And so forth and so forth, Chair. You will recall, Chair, that we have provisions for jail terms of 10 years. There's a provision for, I think, 5 years, and even some months. I can't recall, maybe 12 months. And in addition, we have made provision for the payment of fine as a penalty that can be imposed by the court. So, in terms of the previous bill, or the bill as it was introduced, there was not even a provision for the fine. However, it was introduced as a result of the proposal that the penalties should be reduced. So, Chair, it is as a result of the engagements that we had in the portfolio committee that the penalties should be reduced, and we have done that accordingly. That's all, Chair, I can say in relation to this issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mokolobete and Mr. Sibele Mecha, DM. You have anything else to add? I don't see any other hands from honorable members.
No, just look, the serious offences are dealing. That's the 10-year sentence. And the minister will set the amount that by regulation will set the amount of cannabis that can be grown or possessed, and then and how much the amount that would be, if you're over that would be dealing. The issue of the offences relating to children, as I said, the attempt there is, these are likely to be probably parents or other adults who may be looking after the child. If there really is a problem at home, the child can be, the custody of the child can be something determined by the children's court. But the idea is not to send the father who may be working to jail at all or for a long period. So that's why it's a maximum number of a maximum imprisonment of 12 months, which hopefully one wouldn't get to. So it's basically dealing, which is 10 years, possession of more than the prescribed amount, which is 5 years, cultivating more than the prescribed amount is also 5 years. And the one that is the other penalty that is heavy is engaging a child to deal in cannabis. That is also a heavier penalty of 10 years. And the issue of transportation, I think, is 5 years. And then the ones for adults and children apart from dealing are less. So that's where that all comes from, basically. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, DM and your team. Okay, since there are no other points for deliberation, and I think it's also largely because the cannabis for private use bill gives effect to the two Concord judgments, but also maybe just to say that obviously this also serves as an opportunity to open up for legislation to address the commercialization of cannabis. Our members, I think in our next meeting, which we are scheduling for Friday, we will then deal with the adoption of the bill and the report of the committee on the cannabis for private use bill. Members are aware that at 10 on Friday there's a select committee on cocktail meeting. So we will actually meet at 9 just to deal with the processing of this legislation. I think with regard to the NPA bill, we'll then take further deliberations if there are any in our next meeting on Wednesday. Thank you very much, honorable members, Deputy Minister, the team of legal representatives from the department and Parliament for your attendance and your participation in this meeting. This meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair.